Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning, masks and all. I couldn't help but think yesterday that Halloween's going to be a little disappointing for some kids, isn't it? Sort of anticlimactic. We've all had on masks all year. 2020 has been a challenging year for many of us. I don't know how your 2020 has been, but for some, it's been very, very difficult. Perhaps for you, 2020 has not been as challenging as it has been for some. And I've heard 2020 described as a dumpster fire by some. Met a lady yesterday who's lost her father to COVID. So this has been a year that's been filled with so many issues, hasn't it? We've got the pandemic going on. We've had so much unrest and strife, seems like, this year. We have an election around the corner, and there may be more issues yet to come as we face 2020. A lot of folks have faced a lot of challenges this year. But no matter your life, there's challenges at some point in it. There are challenges that probably have caused you to stop and contemplate, question maybe even your faith. What I want to do this morning is, I believe, an exercise that will be faith building. I hope it will be. That's the intent of it. I want us to go through several questions this morning, but I want to do it as we study the book of Habakkuk. We're not going to study every verse in Habakkuk, but I believe because of some of the things that Habakkuk faces, some of the questions that he has about things, some of the questions that may come up in our own lives, whether it's what's going on in 2020, or maybe it's what went on in your life in 2019, or 2018, or sometime in the past, or something that will arise in the future. There are some parallels, there are some similarities, and I think there are some things for us to glean in this study this morning. What I'd like to do, I want to look at four questions as we go through a quick study of Habakkuk this morning. Why didn't God do what I asked Him? And if God's so good, why does He allow disasters and pandemics and misery? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God allow good people to die without reward in this life? And we will do this, hopefully, within the time frame that we have before us this morning. I hope that this lesson will be one that will provide some meaning for us. That it will build our faith and our confidence and our trust in God. A lot's been written on these subjects by a lot of men. They've turned to Scripture and given some very good, sound answers in trying to address these questions. Men that's a lot smarter than I am. Some have written some things that, quite frankly, go beyond what I can find in Scripture. They offer some suggestions that I can't find basis in. And so I want us to look at these this morning as we look at Habakkuk. Habakkuk, you may remember from our studies on Wednesday nights, Habakkuk was a contemporary, as a prophet anyway, with Jeremiah and Nahum. To kind of put that in context for you, years may not mean anything, but he's going to prophesy about 604 or 605 B.C. Well, that's significant because in 612, about 7 or 8 years before he prophesies, Assyria, you remember Assyria was the nation that conquered Israel, the northern kingdom. Assyria falls in 612 B.C. And they fall to Babylon. Well, at the time, Babylon was essentially a city-state within the nation of Assyria, but they rose to power and the Assyrian leadership had fallen such that they were able to take over. So 612. So now we're at 604, 605 B.C. And what happens then is Assyria's been in power. You know, Babylon's been in power now for about 7 years, and the first deportations. They begin to take people out of Judah, the nations that's left, and start taking them back to Babylon. And in that first group that gets taken back to Babylon is Daniel. Daniel's in that first group of deportations. There'll be a second deportation in 597, so a few years later, and Ezekiel is taken to Babylon. In 586, Judah falls. It's completely wiped out. So you see the time frame that Habakkuk's prophesying is about 19 or 20 years before Judah falls. And his prophecies are going to have to do with both Judah and Babylon, the nation that's going to come in and conquer Judah. And Habakkuk's prophecy is a little bit unique from other prophecies. Typically, when we think of a prophet and prophesying, God gives the prophet a message, and the prophet then turns around and delivers that message to the intended audience. This is more of a conversation between Habakkuk and God. Now, God does tell him to write it down, but it's more of a conversation, and so we get some questions from Habakkuk, some things that he can't understand what's going on and why things are happening as they are, and I think they're questions that are pertinent to us at any point in our lives as we face challenges. It seems like this is the most appropriate time to consider some of these things. Habakkuk will raise two different objections to God, and God will answer each of those objections. Habakkuk will then offer a prayer to God. And Habakkuk's going to recall past deliverances of God's people over and over again. And at the end, Habakkuk makes what's my opinion, perhaps the greatest statement of faith in all of Scripture. I hope as we go through this lesson this morning, that as we near the end of the lesson and we consider some of the things we're going to talk about, that our faith is more like Habakkuk's at the end of the book than our faith is even right now. I hope our faith is strengthened. Our confidence in God is strengthened. Let's begin in Habakkuk chapter 1. We'll look there at the first four verses. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Their strife and conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Habakkuk's been praying to God, hasn't he? He's been asking God. Habakkuk looks around and he sees the violence and the injustice and the lawlessness and the sinfulness of the people. And Habakkuk's praying to God, God, why are you letting this happen? Do something about it. You're standing by. You're not doing anything. And Habakkuk knew that what he was praying for was right. There was nothing wrong in his prayer. He was asking for justice against evildoers. And Habakkuk can't understand, God, you're letting this go on and on and you're doing nothing about this. Well, that'll bring us to our first question this morning. Haven't we done the same thing at times? Felt the same way? We've prayed to God for things that we knew were good and right in and of themselves, yet we can't understand. God, why aren't you hearing this? Why aren't you answering this? Well, I can tell you as we consider this question this morning, why didn't God do what I asked Him? That I don't know why that is. Because I'm not God. But let me ask you this. For those of you that have good parents or had good parents as you were growing up, did your parents always do for you what you wanted them to do? Did they always give you what you asked for them to give you? And sometimes they didn't do it because they didn't have the power. It was just out of their control. It was something they couldn't get for you, do for you, or deliver to you. But oftentimes, they didn't do it because good parents know what's best for the children, right? I just have a feeling that when York and Amanda take Penelope to get shots, that she really doesn't appreciate that. And she's probably crying and begging and wishing that her mom and dad would take her away. But they let her get her shots. Why? They know what's best for her. I can remember in the raising of my children, when we lived in Mobile, I can remember taking them to a pediatric dentist down there, and that was about the most traumatic experience in their lives. Why are you clinging to mama and daddy and then have to just peel them off to get them to the back? And trips to the emergency room? You know, it's bad. I have four sons. My sons knew where the snack machines were, the bathrooms were, and some of the nurses by name. We made it there so many times. But I remember one time, in particular, Joshua was 11 years old. He had broken his right arm and wrist. And there was no doubt it was broken. It was all out of shape and twisted. But he wasn't feeling pain. I guess shock had set in. But it was obviously in very bad shape. The doctors did the x-rays and everything. They came in there to us and into the room. We were in the back of the ER and they told us, y'all need to step out. We've got to put some things in place and set some bones. Well, Joshua wasn't feeling pain. He didn't want that. But what did we do? We went to the lobby of the emergency room and we stood there and cried as we could hear him screaming in the back as they were setting bones. Why did we do that? It was because we as parents knew what was best for him. God knows what's best for us. God has the best interest of His children at heart. Always. Always. So Habakkuk can't understand this. And so God answers him here in chapter 1, verses 5 through 11. This is God's response to Habakkuk's first objection to the things that he sees going on. We're not going to read all of that, but I'd ask you to read with me there, verses 5 and 6. Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. This is the Lord speaking. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwelling places not their own. Well, Habakkuk, I mean, the Chaldeans are the ones that's going to be raised. The Chaldeans are known for their bitterness and their hastiness, some translations read, their ruthlessness, their impetuousness. They were a terrifying enemy, ruthless in their actions. They were an idolatrous nation. They were engaged in sin of almost every kind. And so God says, I've heard your prayer, Habakkuk. I'm taking care of things. I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, and send them down there and let them take care of this. Well, that wasn't the answer that Habakkuk wanted. So Habakkuk considers what God's telling him that he's going to do, and then Habakkuk raises a second objection, another complaint. Look there, if you would, drop down to verse 12 and 13 in particular. O Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O rock, you have ordained them to punishment. Your eyes are too pure to look on. You cannot tolerate wrong. Why do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? And then at the end of that objection in chapter 2, verse 1, Habakkuk says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me. And what answer I am to give to this complaint. Habakkuk thinks God's answer to him is awful. He can hardly believe what he's hearing. You mean, verse 12, he calls God an eternal and holy God. You mean an eternal and holy God is going to send this unrighteous people down here to do this to his own people who are, at least in Habakkuk's eyes, more righteous than them? In verse 13, we see a misunderstanding, I believe, that Habakkuk has of who God is and what God is. And I think it's a misunderstanding that perhaps we sometimes share. Habakkuk can't imagine that a God who can't even look on sin, can't look on iniquity, would allow a sinful nation to prevail against his own people. Because God's pure. Because he's good, because he's righteous, because he's everlasting. Well, how can he let evil like that just run rampant over everything? How could he let a nation more evil than Judah do this to Judah? Verse 13 says, because God was of purer eyes. He couldn't even look on sin. God, how can you do this? How can you let this happen? Habakkuk failed to see how God could use a nation more wicked than Judah to chasten Judah to bring about good for God's people. So that brings us to another question we want to consider this morning. If God's so good, why does he allow disasters? Why does he allow pandemics? Why does he allow misery in this life? Why? Well, I don't know. I'm not God. I'm beginning to see a trend in the answers here. I don't know. I'm not God. If I had God's wisdom, I'd be God. If I had the wisdom of a doctor, I'd be a doctor. If I got sick, I wouldn't need to go to the doctor. If I got injured, I wouldn't need to go to the doctor because I have the wisdom of a doctor. I'm not God. And I don't have his wisdom. God has greater wisdom than we do. Whether we can explain these things or not, we know that God is exercising his wisdom and his love for us. And I suggest to you that man hasn't always applied God's wisdom in their lives. And that brings about a lot of adverse results and a lot of the misery that we see in the world. But that's not always the case. I think we see, though, something here with Habakkuk that perhaps we might be guilty of sometimes, too. And I think this may help us as we consider these things. You see, Habakkuk looked for the punishment of the wicked, so that he and the people around him, God's nation, could be prosperous. But God looked to the punishment of Habakkuk's people so that they could be restored to fellowship with him. Habakkuk was looking more, it seems, toward just having peace and prosperity right here, right now on this earth, and God's looking at something far greater. Which of those two is the most important? I think sometimes we are guilty of that. We're expecting everything just to be good in this life. And that's not the way it always happens. Well, God's going to respond to this second complaint now of Habakkuk. This complaint about, well, God, how can you, so good, right, pure, can't even look on iniquity, how can you send this wicked nation here? God responds to him in chapter 2, verses 2 through 20. And we're not going to look at all those verses. And quite frankly, we're not going to be able to study every verse and talk about every point in Habakkuk this morning for the sake of time. But what I'd like to do there is look at chapter 2, verses 2 through 4. Chapter 2, verses 2 through 4. The Lord's answer there, starting in verse 2. The Lord replied, "Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets, so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end, and it will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, he is puffed up, his desires are not right, but the righteous will live by his faith. God doesn't answer Habakkuk's second complaint directly. But he tells him to write down the vision. He tells him to wait for it, because it will be fulfilled. In his response, God does touch upon both the evildoer and the faithful. Particularly there in verse 4 that we read. I believe when he talks about there in verse 4 that his soul is puffed up, it is not upright within him, he's talking about Babylon, the nation that he is going to destroy after they've been used by him. Babylon was a proud people. They relied on themselves. They were not God. They were an immoral people. The prophet then uses a contrasting phrase. His soul is puffed up, but then he talks about the righteous who shall live by faith. I think those are opposites. I think they're contrasting, converse concepts. One soul is puffed up. It's not upright within him. The other one, righteous, and he lives by faith. That phrase, the righteous shall live by faith, probably sounds familiar to you because it's repeated several times in the New Testament. I know Paul uses it twice, I believe in Romans and Galatians, and then the writer of Hebrews uses the passage as well. And there may be some other references, but those are three that come to mind. The just, the righteous is the opposite, the converse of the proud man or the one who's lifted up. Think about that for just a moment. In the light of the situation, Habakkuk knows what's about to happen. He already sees how bad things are. That phrase, the righteous shall live by his faith. Think about all the concepts associated with that. In the face of all that was about to happen there, and of what was going on there, the righteous shall live by his faith. Don't the concepts associated with that phrase, shouldn't they help us persevere through whatever circumstance of life arises? I think that's the point. That's the way I believe that Paul, in the writer of Hebrews, uses that passage later. Even though God allows things to happen that we can't always understand why, the just, the righteous, live by faith. That living by faith provides a solution to the doubt that we sometimes feel in God's all-wise providence. And when the prophet says that the just or the righteous shall live, I think he's speaking and contemplating any things beyond just this life. He's looking at things beyond this life. The promise here is, it goes beyond just the temporal future of the Chaldeans and of Judah. And again, I think that's how the New Testament writers use it. So don't lose the importance of that concept in the midst of all these questions, that the righteous shall live by his faith. I believe that phrase, that faith in God, is the key to consistent living through any circumstance of life. It helps eliminate peaks and valleys. It helps us deal with situations that seem terrible that we can't explain. And we're able to stay the course and stay steady through it. let's consider our next question. Why do bad things happen to good people? There are those who have tried to walk in God's wisdom, yet bad things happen to them, right? I don't have the answer to that question either. But I do know, and I have confidence in God, that God knows things I don't know. And sometimes we don't know what's good for us. And something we might think is good is really bad. And something that we think is bad is really good. We're going to talk about the parents who let their children get shots and go to the dentist and get bones set and stitches put in and all that sort of stuff. It's because they know what's good for the child. Think with me for just a moment back in Genesis. Think about the story of Joseph. Remember Joseph? Joseph was, for all intents and purposes, he was a good boy. But he told his father about some of the bad things his brothers were doing, and they hated him for it. Was that good? Joseph probably didn't think that was so good. He had to suffer their hatred and suffer their envy. Ultimately, they sold him, and he ended up as a slave in Egypt. Was that good? I'm sure Joseph didn't think that was good. But we know the rest of the story, don't we? He was sold to Potiphar. Potiphar's wife made some accusations against him. He had done the right thing, but he ended up in prison for it. Was that good? Joseph probably didn't think that was good. It really happened because he was good. He was in prison. There was a fellow prisoner there that was supposed to remember him when he got out of prison so he could get Joseph released. And the prisoner got out and he failed to remember Joseph. And Joseph had to stay longer in prison. Was that good? Joseph probably didn't think that was so good. When bad things happen to us, it's not necessarily a judgment against us. But it's that God sees it can be a blessing for us, even when we can't see it. Even sickness, even financial disaster, can ultimately be a blessing in our lives. In this second answer that God gives to Habakkuk, there's a series of woes pronounced upon those who commit sin. And the prophet sees all of this in his vision. And at the end of that, in verses 19 and 20, of chapter 2, it says, "Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There's no breath in it. But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before Him." As Habakkuk gets to the end of that section, this statement, verse 20 is a contrast. Verse 20 is a contrast to verse 19. These wicked people can cry out to these idols, these blocks of wood, these stones that are covered with gold. They can cry out to them, they can holler to them, they can ask them to respond to them, to teach them, to guide them, and they're not going to get any answer no matter how loud they holler, they scream, they beg, they plead. They're not going to get that. But I believe the point is here at the end is those kind of things aren't needed of God. I think there's confidence in that statement that the Lord is in His holy temple. The Lord's in control. The Lord is looking out for His people. He's in His holy temple. Let the earth keep silent before Him. He is the Lord, and vengeance will take place upon those that are sinners and that are doing wrong. But the Lord is in His holy temple, and He will care for His own. In Habakkuk chapter 3, Habakkuk has heard God's words and His pronouncements, and he's asked for mercy in the face of judgment. Look there in chapter 3 and verse 2. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. O Lord, renew them in our day, in our time make them known, in wrath remember mercy. And then through verse 15, Habakkuk is going to go through a series of remembrances of God's mercy in the face of wrath, where God has delivered His people, His faithful people, over and over again. What's the point in that? Why is he doing that? The point is, whatever happens, don't let your faith grow weak. God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. No matter how bad things are around us, no matter how we can't answer trying times in our lives, remember, God delivers His people. He is a rewarder of those that diligently seek Him. That brings us to our fourth question. So why does God let good people die without reward in this life? I mean, we look at Joseph, and after all the trials he went through, why, he was raised to the second highest position in all of Egypt. Worked out good for him. We look at Job. Job lost everything but his wife. But he was ultimately restored beyond what he had before. Worked out good for Job. That doesn't always happen, does it? It's not always the way things work out. No matter how good, how godly we try to be, for some, life's just harder than for others. For some, it's like life's downhill the whole way, with one problem and one challenge and one issue after another. You remember Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 speaks of the things that he suffered as a disciple. Then you know the story. And we honor him, don't we? But think about how the world would have seen Paul. Well, Paul, as a young man, you had everything going for you. You were in the right places. You were well situated. You were doing really well. But it was downhill for him after that in the eyes of the world. He was a nobody. He was hated, stoned, beaten. And ultimately, history tells us that he died at the hands of the emperor, all alone. Why has God let that happen? Well, I suggest to you that God sees things differently than we do. God doesn't see death as a tragedy. For those that are His, death is not a tragedy, and life is just preparation for eternity. Heard Sewell Hall talk about this, and he said, for those that die early, those that are His, that death is like early graduation. The baby that dies goes straight to the arms of Jesus. Never suffer. There'll be no anxiety. In that place, he rests with the Lord, safe in the arms of Jesus. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of His saints. Death, for those that are His, is going to something better. And if God lets somebody die early, somebody that's His, and He lets them die early, if He lets someone die who's in a terrible condition, it's a release. It's a blessing. Because they go to something better. That's God's love exhibited. God is good. It's a phrase we hear a lot, isn't it? And I see it all over Facebook. I hear people say, God is good. Well, usually the people saying it, life's good for them. It's easy to say that when all's going well. But God's good all the time. Even through all these things we've talked about this morning, God's good. Don't ever doubt Hebrews 11:6. God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. Don't ever doubt Romans chapter 8, verse 28. That's a passage that, quite frankly, is abused and misused in our world today. That passage says, all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. And all too often, I hear people trying to take that and apply that to life here and now, just like Habakkuk was having some issues with that. All things work together for good to them that love the Lord. Well, what if I love the Lord and it's not working out good? Well, in this life, it might not. But that's not what He's talking about. God sees things differently. God knows things we don't know. God can take whatever happens and use it for our good, for our eternal good, for our spiritual good. That's important for us to remember. Well, after considering all these things, Habakkuk has struggled with understanding them and appreciating God for what He is. After considering all those things, Habakkuk makes what, in my opinion, is perhaps the greatest statement of faith and greatest confidence toward God in the Word, in the whole Word, the whole Bible. In chapter 3, verses 17 and 18, Habakkuk says, though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. As you read Habakkuk, you can tell his inward parts tremble because of some of the things that he heard. Some of the things that he knew was going to happen. Things that he couldn't understand. But his attitude was one of submission to the will of God. His faith and his trust in the Lord illustrate the way we should face adversity in our lives. Faith and trust in God. Those are the foundations for dealing with any adversity in life. And that faith and that trust has to go beyond expecting everything just to be good and right and happy here on earth. We have to have faith and trust in Him that He's looking out for our best interest, no matter the circumstances, because our best interests don't lie in the here and now. May our faith and our trust ever grow. Well, some may ask, Chad, how can you trust a God that has allowed slavery, that's allowed oppression, that's allowed injustice, that's allowed the wealthy to exploit the poor, that's allowed terrible leaders to come to power in the world and kill so many people and there just be so much misery in human existence? How can you trust a God like that? How can you trust an unseen entity that allows these sorts of things to happen? Especially to those that you believe are His. How can you trust? How can you trust that God? Well, my answer is, it's because I know His character. I know the character of my God. I know that He's looking out for my best interest. And my best interests lie far beyond the here and now. He's looking out for my best interest. And I know that because He sent His Son to die on the cross. So I can be with Him for all of eternity. I hope these words this morning have been encouraging. I hope they've been faith building. I hope they brought us closer to that faith and trust in God that Habakkuk exhibits. And that it will help us in our walk, not just this next week, but every day of our lives until the very end. Because this is what it takes. God does have the best interest of all mankind at heart. But to those that are His, it's a certain end. We may have some here this morning who aren't His, who haven't taken Him up on His offer. We may have some that have fallen away that need to make things right. If we have any here this morning who are subject to the invitation, we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing.